Welcome to Hold Up, the podcast where we discuss the steamiest Wachowski film ever made. My name is Hudson, and my co-host is Grace. Hey, Grace.
Hi. I've watched this movie now, Bound. I feel like, yeah.
Yeah, I think this might be the steamiest movie we've ever watched on this podcast.
Yeah. It's pretty steamy, pretty intimate, yeah.
Yeah, and it's famously known for having been choreographed by a queer feminist sex writer or something.
Is it true?
Yes.
Choreographed?
Yes, the sex scenes were choreographed by Susie Bright.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and she also appears in the movie as the lesbian who Corky hits on in the bar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and all the lesbians in that movie, besides, like the real lesbians, are all her friends.
Yeah. So I had never seen this movie. It kind of like always comes up as like a, you know, it's one of those movies that I feel like, you know, you're supposed to watch, I guess, is maybe the best way to put it. But I'd never seen it. But what was your first experience with this movie?
You know, I don't remember when I first saw it, but I was definitely in high school. Back when I first had my my Netflix subscription.
Oh, yes.
And I was definitely under 18 and watching this movie that is definitely, I would say, for people who are over 18.
Yes.
I don't blame my teenage self for watching it, but, you know, it's one of those movies. I don't know if I talked about that here, but it's one of those movies that I feel like I shouldn't have watched as a teenager. Because I couldn't appreciate it the way I do as an adult.
Yeah, it was quite good. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good film. I think that I didn't know the plot of the film at all. Like, I didn't really know anything about the movie other than the poster. I'd seen the poster. And so, yeah, when I was watching it, it's like, you know, obviously, you know, that, like, them being together is, like, a plot point, but it's not the plot of the movie. And actually, like, if I have a critique of the movie, so I kind of wish Corky was in the movie more. I kind of want more Gina Gershon. But yeah, I like how it's I think a really well told film.
I agree. I was, when I was doing my like Google searching for articles about the movie afterwards, it seemed that the consensus is that it was a movie that, not that it was ahead of its time, it very much was ahead of its time in the way it treated queerness, but in the sense that, like, the storytelling was really good, but it just kind of, like, bombed because no one knew who the Wachowskis were back then. It was their first film, and it was the film that, like, actually prompted, you know, investors to give them the money to produce The Matrix. So we have a lot to thank for Bound.
Yeah, it's really interesting, too, for, like, them to have decided to make this film that has like lesbians as the like stars of the film when like neither of them are out at the time. I was wondering, I was a little worried actually in some senses that like this movie, when you look back on it, was sort of I'm not worried, but like a bit tropey in terms of like lesbianism, that it would be like you know, sort of about like the male gaze on lesbians. I was a bit like, you know, I knew that it was sort of a cult classic, but I wondered how much it delved into that territory. I say it doesn't really. I mean, it is like sexual in nature, right? Like, you know, we talked about it being a steamy movie. It doesn't feel like, it's just really interesting that like they made this film before they were out as like queer trans filmmakers, you know. I think it's like a really interesting thing to like look back on in their first major film is this like film lesbian like mob movie. Is really interesting, I think.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. I think part of the reason it holds up so well is because we can look back on this movie as being created by two queer women instead of being created by two straight men. Maybe it wouldn't have gotten a second look if neither of them had ever come out, you know?
Well, I don't know when it became a cult film, but it feels like it's a cult film. Feels like it's like, you know, it's on every list of like, these are the lesbian movies you should watch, you know?
Yeah, I think probably like, I don't know, when did this come out, 1996? I feel like, you know, after 20 years, that's when movies start becoming cult classics. It takes that long. Like, you know,
Do you think so? I think there's a world in which, like, it happens kind of like in the olden days. It was like the movie didn't come out on VHS until like much later than it was like in the theaters, right? It might have like, you know, this movie does okay. It just barely makes back its money, which is funny when I, you know, in context, because it actually made $1 million, which is just so much money. But at the box office, that's barely making your money back. It made $7 million on a $6 million budget. And yet, you know, in 96... the way then you would watch the movie if you didn't see it in the theaters is you pass around the VHS, right? You go to Blockbuster, you rent it. I probably wouldn't, you know, if I knew about this movie, I wouldn't have watched it because I wouldn't have wanted anybody to think I was watching a gay movie. But that's like how stuff, I think, kind of like at that time would like, you know, becomes cultish. Is like, what do your friends have on their like VHS, on their DVD, stand? So I bet it became culty a little bit after that, and then becomes like mainstream culty probably like 20 years later. Does that make sense?
We're like, that does make sense. Like the youths have found it, or, you know, not the youths, people who were kids when the movie came out have found it.
Right.
And it helps inform their own sexualities and that sort of thing. But yeah, you know, it's really hard to talk. I don't know why it's hard to talk about this film, but it just like, it was just very refreshing in how they portrayed these two women, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that I think like that's in there, that's like a little, I don't know, is like that the fact that like, she's with what's the main character, Caesar. Mm-hmm. And so she's like sneaking around with her, you know, but other than that, it's like, I don't know. It's pretty fun, you know. I think that the reveal of like her being like, well, I can hear you, and she's like, I'm just doing that because it's a job, you know, like I'm just trying to figure out how to pay the bills, you know, don't blame me, you know. I think it's quite fun. And then the fact of like, and again, my only like, I have the critique of like Corky's kind of like gets sidelined. Like there's so much of this movie that's like the thriller style, like, oh, are they going to get caught right here? And so much of that is happening while Corky is in the other room, while Caesar and Violet are like in the other room. But I think that like, I thought that the phone scene, and I think it's set up so well. I think like the thing about this movie is that like, I was just impressed from it, from my typical movie stance. I was like not setting the bar as to like, you know, what's the Christmas movie we watched, Hudson?
Make the Yuletide Gay.
Make the Yuletide Gay. I feel like I liked that movie, but I set my bar for good gay Christmas movie very low, and I feel like this movie passed my bar of like LGBTQ movies from the past, but also like I could set my bar at like my normal like movie critique level, you know. I think that it's like there's you know, her Corky overhearing them having sex and like them also like, yeah, they're really thin walls, which pays off later when he's using the redial function on his phone to like call back the number, and the phone rings like across the hall, which she's like at first realizes, but as she's like backing away, realizing she's going to get caught, she's letting the phone ring, which then rings through the wall. It's all like pretty clever and well done. It was fun. I thought it was a fun movie.
Yeah. I mean, fun is subjective. It was very violent.
I like dark, sad chaos stuff. So yeah, for me it was fun.
See, I can't watch violence. That's my big turnoff in movie and film. It's like I have to close my eyes and then I just like stop paying attention. And so like there were bits of the movies like where I know there was like a part where there was the
torture Maloney's scene in the bathroom is a bit, even for me, it was a bit much. Yeah.
And like cutting off the fingers. And,
yep.
Yeah, it was a little gratuitous, and I think it's the only thing in the film that I don't like. Like, I like high tension thriller movies. Like, I can deal with that. It's really just the blood and gore that turned me off. And there was plenty of like, you know, tension without the violence.
Yep.
And like, you know, I'm not saying they shouldn't put the violence in there. It's just, that's just my personal preference.
To me, the violence works because it ratchets up the tension as the movie's going on, in which, you know, we're invested in Violet and Corky, and to know that all of these people in this world will do really awful stuff makes you worried when like they're on the verge of getting caught, right? Is I think the thing that they set up you know, what these people are willing to do to then have the threat of that happening to them live over them in the rest of the movie. But certainly if you're just like not a fan of violence, it's like never going to work, you know? Some people don't need it to be like, I don't like this. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just always going to be squeamish about that stuff. It's just who I am. Mm-hmm. But I really just want to talk about the gay stuff. As you know, I alluded to in the beginning, or I explicitly mentioned in the beginning of this episode, is that they had this movie, you know, choreographed by a queer woman in terms of the sex scenes. And as someone who was previously identified as a lesbian, I just want to give my seal of approval in terms of the realism. And also just, you know, not the characters not being what's referred to as stone in any sense, like a stone top or stone bottom. Like, both of them are very into each other, into exploring each other's bodies. That was great. The hand is a sexual organ. You know, I know a lot of queer women who, and just queer femmes who use that language too. So I feel like even those who haven't even seen the movie, it's like something that's really permeated throughout like lesbian culture throughout the years.
Right. I thought like just establishing Gina Gershon as Corky as like this very confident, I think they're both quite confident in the way that like sort of for Jennifer Tilly as Violet, the scene where she's like comes over, or well, sorry, she gets Corky to come over because she's dropped her earring intentionally in the drain, sort of having this like confidence to pursue her as well, but then Corky just being like very confident in who she is as a person. She wears very cool earrings that can pick locks. I thought that was very cool. I was very jealous of this. Not that I'm picking a lot of locks, but I thought that, like, you know, I thought that I really liked that and the confidence that the two had, and I thought they had a lot of chemistry together, as evidenced by these steamy scenes directed by Susie Bright. Yeah,
I actually read a little bit of this Entertainment Weekly article that came out about 2 or 3 years ago, where they interviewed Gina Gershon and Jennifer Tilly about the movie. No offense to EW, but it's kind of a mishmash. Like, I don't really enjoy the article because it kind of jumps all over the place and is not really cohesive. But you know, they talk about how they have such great chemistry, and how they're like both like, you know, you're my only friend I've kept from a movie ever, you know, like, it's like true that they really like have an affection for one another. And like, you can see that in the movie, which, you know, I feel can be kind of rare, especially in movies where it's like, you know, straight actresses playing queer women.
Yeah. They're both straight, right?
Yes. Sadly.
Trying to look. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we've probably over talked about queer people playing queer roles, but
it's the 90s.
It's the 90s. Yeah. Yeah, I thought they were great together. I thought they're both good. I mean, I really love Gina Gershon here. I don't think I've seen her in a ton of other stuff. I guess I've seen her in Face Off and I guess Showgirls, but not a ton else. I'm not a Riverdale fan, apparently. It's really funny. Her Wikipedia regards her as a gay icon. Do you think Gina Gershon is considered a gay icon?
Yeah, 100%.
Because she plays a lesbian for Pray for Rock and Roll and Showgirls.
I was going to say that she was in another lesbian movie where she played a Joan Jett type called Pray for Rock and Roll. So I think,
Showgirls, she's bisexual, but yeah.
In Pray for Rock and Roll, she's bisexual?
No, in Showgirls, she's bisexual.
Oh, well, yeah. I don't really count Showgirls. it's not
well, I'm just telling you what the Wikipedia calls her a gay actor because of these three roles.
Well, I think more like that Showgirls is a camp classic in that sense.
Oh, you're reading the bracket in which she played a bisexual showgirl and which is regarded as a camp classic.
I'm not even looking at the Wikipedia. Okay.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
She's also like a hardcore feminist. I know she like has done some work about like getting women more involved, I think, in like behind the scenes things in films and like film production. And she appeared in this like weird movie called In a World, which was like about women voice actors or voiceover actors for movie trailers. And yeah, she appeared as like her kind of herself as like a being like a feminist.
She had a role on Brooklyn Nine-Nine as well. She plays Lieutenant Melanie Hawkins on Brooklyn Nine-Nine as well. Yeah, she's been around. She's great. I like her a lot. Yeah.
And she's got that tough chick sort of feeling, you know?
She's badass. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she plays Corky so well. Like, I think, like, you know, it's a perfect role, perfect casting for this role. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know that Jennifer Tilly was originally cast as Corky?
I've seen that before. Where, like, yeah, they'll, like, audition for, like, for these different roles. I did not see that she was originally was cast as Corky. I could definitely see it. I could see it. I could see. I don't know if I could see them swapping roles. I could definitely see Jennifer Tilly as Corky and then them bringing in somebody else as Violet.
I can't see Jennifer Tilly as Corky, to be honest. I think she just plays Violet so well and, like, plays that hyper femme, like, that you like, that's like a real person. Like, there are women like that out there and femmes like that out there. It's just like, who, and who, like, still, like, mimic that aesthetic to this day. Like, Violet Chotsky, the famed drag queen who won season 7 of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes.
You know, she took her name as part of her drag name, and, like, very much uses that sort of same aesthetic. Like, it's kind of like a 1950s pinup aesthetic, I would say.
For sure. And she has the, like, that voice that's, like, very, I don't know who I would describe it as, but that sort of, like, when, especially when she's with Caesar in the movie, the Joe Pantoliano character, she has that, like, I don't know, like, innocent, I don't know, old school, old Hollywood voice.
Almost affectation. Marilyn Monroe-esque.
Yeah, that's a very good comp. Yeah, it's Marilyn Monroe. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I think that's what I'm feeling, is that she gives me such Marilyn Monroe vibes, I couldn't see her as Corky. Maybe that's a little bit, you know, messed up of me. Maybe I need to be able to picture someone who's hyper femme being able to play hyper butch. But
yeah. I was trying to see what if she had been in anything else that would that where she would have more of the Corky vibe, but I'm not seeing it. She plays poker a lot, apparently.
Does she? Did she do some Kevin Smith films?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. There's, like, a few actors. Maybe it's a different actress. I mean, you know, I'm thinking of someone else who played somebody in Chasing Amy, who's, like, reminds me of Jennifer Tilly.
She's been in a lot of Chucky stuff.
Okay,
that's her thing. Yeah, she's in the new, including being in the new Chucky series that came out last year, which also has some interesting LGBTQ representation. Have you heard about this?
No, because I, you know, horror usually means violence. Usually means I don't watch.
I think if I'm remembering correctly, Chucky's child is trans. I think, and it's like might be like an offhanded where like he says it, and then they're like, oh, that's like really like that's really like. Mature of you to like acknowledge your and it's like, yeah, I'm not a monster, you know, like that's kind of like the bit of the joke is. Wait, Chucky being, yeah,
how does Chucky have a human child?
Listen, I do not know the Chucky cinematic universe or television universe for that matter, but I'm pretty sure that's like the whole bit. Yeah, that like their child is, his child is trans, and then someone's like, wow, it's very mature. He's like, yeah, I'm not a monster.
This leaves me with a lot of questions.
Yeah, maybe we should cover it at some point. It only came out last year. Yeah, we see if already if it holds up. Yeah, the episode 6 is called Cape Queer. I think Chucky's very LGBTQ, Hudson.
Yeah, Chucky's a gay icon. Chucky, watch out, Babadook.
Yeah, look out, Gina Gershon.
Yeah.
Chucky's coming for your spot. Yeah, I thought they were both good. And I like, you know, it's like very silly to say this, but like because there's two lesbians in it and they're very different, we get two forms of representation of lesbianism in a movie, which is like, whoa, that's pretty wild.
And there's even some good subtle references to lesbianism that I feel like only someone who understands lesbianism would get, like the tattoo of the axe that Corky has, which is called Labrys, is actually very famous in like lesbian circles as being like a symbol of like lesbian feminism back in the 1970s, because it like represents strength and self-sufficiency from like the patriarchal society. So her having that like is like, you know, I feel like only that Susie Bright was the one who was like, you need this tattoo on her for sure.
I do wonder, like, you know, I said this about The Matrix as well, because I covered The Matrix over on the post-show recaps Patreon feed with my co-host Ariel. We watched all of the previous movies and the Animatrix leading up to the new movie that got released last year. And I thought it was really interesting to, like, think about how much they were doing subconsciously or how much they were consciously choosing to put into The Matrix. There's huge trans analogies in all of the Matrix films. And yet they, you know, Lana is on like the verge of coming out. Lana, like I think the first movie comes out in 1999, I believe. And then Lana comes out in the very early 2000s, like 2003. It's like 4 years difference. I don't know. I guess like, I don't know. I'm trying to think back like when I came out, like what the time span between like, I mean, I basically had like many, many years of like knowing that there was something different about me, like doing the like, you know, weird Google searches to like figure it out, like experimenting in very secretive ways, and then rejecting all of that, like suppressing it until it all exploded and then telling somebody. And I guess it took me probably about a year or so from like telling somebody to then taking active steps to like transition. But I mean, you know when you know, but also like, and I guess like 1999, the internet's around. Like, I just, I'm thinking specifically with the Matrix, like how much was like, were they both sort of like thinking about and like then consciously writing in trans analogies in, or whether it's just like, I'm trying to think of like when I was in the closet, was I thinking about the world? Like, I don't know. I guess they're like much smarter writers than me and that like, this is what they do for a living. But to be able to like, I barely could understand what was going on to me until I could like explore it. And so the idea to like put all this stuff in writing, I think, before they come out is really, really interesting. And who knows how long, especially in that time period, whether they knew and weren't able to be out, or whether they were didn't even know that they were gonna come out, you know, is all very interesting.
Yeah, we gotta wait for their autobiographies to come out, or memoirs.
Yeah, come on, what are they doing? I guess I, you know, there's probably like interviews and stuff with all of this information, but I have not read them.
Yeah,
I mean, just wondering like how much, you know, and I don't know exactly how either of them identify since coming out either, whether they're who they are in relationships with. I know Lana dated women before coming out, but I don't know if that's, you know,
she's married to a woman, I believe, or she's partnered with a woman, I believe.
The thing I kind of hate is that their Wikipedia page is all one page, just both of them together. So I don't know.
I'm like, I feel like, because there was a famous breakup between another trans person and Lana's partner.
So Lily married Lisa Blasingham in 1991, but in 2016, Lily mentioned having a boyfriend, which supposedly Mickey Ray Mahoney, who is a trans man. Lana married Tae Bloom in 1993, but I think she's married to Karen Winslow.
Yes.
So, and they got married in 2009, and it seems like they're still together. So, looks like, you know, and sexuality is obviously fluid and whatnot, but it seems like Lana is still married to Karen Winslow, whereas Lily is dating a man.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah. Hey, they definitely, at least one of them is, at least in some way, sapphic. like, you know, and maybe both of them are sapphic, you know. But that's not, you know, that's it's not up us to speculate. But, you know, I think one of them, really interesting parts about this movie is that, like they said, so this is from the EW interview with Jennifer Tilly and Gina Gershon, is that Jennifer Tilly says that that a studio offered the Wachowskis a lot more money to make the movie, but they would have to make Corky a man, and they refused.
Oh, interesting.
So it's like, if they fought so hard for this, like, is it because they both, you know, wanted, like, they were more interested in the perspective of women, because that's unconsciously they both, you know, were women and didn't want to tell a story like that, like, centers a man in, you know, like a gangster movie. They like wanted to flip expectations in that sort of way, because, like, you know, the men in this film are very 2D in a lot of ways. Like Caesar, who is Violet's partner, boyfriend, is just like low-level mafia guy who launders the money for the Chicago mob. And that's pretty much what we know about him.
Yeah.
And like, we don't know much more about Corky and Violet, but we like understand their motivations, and we understand you know, the fact that Corky obviously has had a rough life, she was in prison for a while, and that Violet has kind of taken up with male lovers as a way to survive while she's more interested in, like, women. Mm-hmm. Which is more than we can say about Caesar. Like, all I can say about Caesar is what I said.
Yeah. I think there's some stuff to Caesar. I mean, it's like, oh yeah, the male character is actually very fleshed out, but I do think he's an interesting character in that he's sort of this guy who he's caught up in this, like, you know, world that's probably, you know, too much for him, but he's trying to put on this, like, pristine image that cracks very easily, right? Like, he often, like, it often, like, gets to him. So he's very, like, you could argue in this movie are Corky and Violet, like, incredibly smart, like, and savvy, like, you know, the ability to, like, plan this whole thing to, like, get him out? Or is he also, like, a big goofball? It's like a mixture of both in some senses. Like, he's like, he should have his eye on, like, everything that's happening, and he, like, clearly doesn't, you know?
But he's also not as dumb as they think he would be. Like, he figures out pretty fast what's going on, and they don't think he's going to figure it out that fast.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, I think that, and again, that's, like, part of, like, the plot reveals of this movie that I think actually, like, work pretty well. I do love the scene when, like, they come up with the plan of, like, how they're going to steal the money. I think that's, like, probably, for me, the best sequence in the whole movie is when, you know, she's, like, fake drops the bottle and says she has to go out, and then she comes back just to pretend like she's seen him. I like Corky coaching her through that whole thing. Again, just more of, like, I think their chemistry together, and they're both great in this movie. Yeah, Christopher Maloney shows up in this movie from famed Law & Order stardom. He just gets shot in the leg. That's basically all he does. I guess he's Johnny. But yeah, I think it was fun. That was a perfectly fun movie. Yeah,
and I mean, you thought it was fun. I thought it was horrifying, but, you know, different strokes, different folks. I kind of want to go back to what the Wachowskis, you know, I found this, a little bit of some interviews spliced together about the Wachowskis describing what, like, some of their motivation behind making the film. I think might not necessarily answer our questions, but kind of, like, flesh them out a little bit more.
Yeah.
So, you know, they said the film is about the boxes that people make of their lives, and it's not only about how gay people live in closets. And they wanted to define the characters as, like based on, like, what they were trapped in, on how they, like, lived their lives. And, like, so from this interview, like, Violet is trapped in her life with Caesar, and Corky ends up being trapped in Violet's closet, bound up by Caesar, and Caesar is, like, trapped in this, you know, cycle of violence and in this mafia role that, you know, like you said, is, like, he's in over his head about.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really think about the why is it called the movie Bound, but it does make sense if that's their position statement, that, like, people, you get stuck in these, like, things that society or people or yourself, you put yourself in these situations that you get, like, stuck in. And yeah, this movie is really about, I think, Violet in particular trying to break free from that, like, with the help of Corky, of trying to break free from this, like, you know, she's like, yeah, I'll just do it as a job, but, like, it's not, you know, obviously she's, like, stuck, you know, and so for Corky to, like, help her pull it through with obviously, like, speed bumps along the way. But that's really interesting that it's, like, it's not just about in ways in which, like, people are bound by their, like, heteronormative standards of society, but also these other roles and situations you find yourself in.
And I wonder why they would be so drawn to this.
Why?
Theme,
why?
You know, yeah, in the early, the mid 90s, you know?
Yeah. Mm. I mean, another big theme of the movie, too, is I feel like the Wachowskis really love a story that's about love. They really love love. That's a big theme of The Matrix, is that, like, Neo and Trinity, they're, like, love can literally, like, save them from, like, the terrible situation they're in, which is kind of a theme of this movie and a thesis theme of this movie as well, that, like, you know, if you love somebody, you can, like, persevere and pull through. Except for Joe. He loves Violet and he dies, but, you know, Violet and Corky, they love each other and they make it out alive because they love each other. Yeah.
Yeah, they get their happy ending and, you know,
That's a plot twist too.
Yeah,
it's, I thought, like, one of them was gonna die for sure.
It's like, we get, first off, a movie that's not, doesn't revolve around, like, anyone having, like, a crisis over their sexuality, which I feel like
Yeah, that thing I was saying about confidence. Like, by the time, yeah. like, she's, like, you would, the movie sets it up. Like, you're going to think Violet's going to be, like, unsure of her sexuality. Corky's going to, like, pursue her. It's the total opposite. Violet pursues Corky, you know? And Corky's pretty confident in her sexuality. And then Violet is, like, confident enough to be like, hey, let's sleep together. I think I like you. It's really yeah. refreshing. Yeah.
It is. And, like, there were so many, like, even after this movie came out and before this movie came out, it was just like the gay, queer, lesbian movie was there is this open lesbian who makes this, or, you know, open queer person who, like, comes into this person, this seemingly straight person's life and makes them question their sexuality. And that's what the entire movie is about, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's always this openly queer character is always just a plot device in this other person's story. And, like, that kind of sucks, you know? Like, we've had enough of those. I don't think we're getting as many as we used to. I can't really even think of a recent, like, queer movie that's been that on theme like that. Maybe I just haven't been watching them.
I can't think of someone, and someone will let us know. But yeah, it's hard to think of something that's like, come out already, you know? feel like we're not real. Yeah.
Like, even Brokeback Mountain was that film, you know? Like,
yep. Is Carol, like, that film?
I never saw Carol.
yeah, so, yeah.
I mean, maybe Carol's that film. I don't know.
I think it is, but I don't know. Anyway.
But, like, it's like, this movie could have come out last year, you know? Well, maybe not last year, but it could have come out in, like, the late 2010s because of how, like, progressive it is in terms of just sexuality. Like, they're unapologetically interested in each other. And it's like, and, like, yes, there is some, like, you know, minor, like, homophobia that comes through. Like, Caesar freaks out when he sees Corky and Violet alone together in her room, in, like, their apartment, and then realizing Corky's a woman, he's, like, not threatened anymore. That's mm-hmm. like the most, like, casually homophobic thing I would say that comes out of the movie.
And when he realizes they're together, right, he, like, but I don't know, I can't remember, is that, like, more like he's just mad that they're together, or is that, does he say anything? I don't remember there being, like, any, like, slurs or anything in this movie.
I think he's more mad they stole his money.
Yeah, that's, I would be pretty mad too, so.
He was mostly mad about that. And, you know,
That's the other thing that, like, I mean, unsurprisingly, the Wachowskis, and this is kind of, like, linked to the thing you were saying about, like, being bound to roles, but identity obviously plays a big, like, you know, she's code switching, basically, right? Like, in some instances of, like, when she's with Corky versus when she's with Joe, which is, you know, unsurprisingly that the Wachowskis are interested in identity either, but.
Yeah, and, yeah, they get their happy ending, and Caesar ends up dead, and
yep, it's great.
Yeah. And oh, I have another great quote actually from a Guardian article about came out this, I guess, about the 25th anniversary of the movie, which was last year. Uh-huh. That also makes Bound the seed for the escape fantasy that struck a chord in The Matrix. In both films, we see star-crossed lovers seeking to escape an oppressive power structure that is unmistakably masculine. Unmistakably masculine in image, its violent enforcers incarnated as sneering goons in sharply tailored business suits. So, like, in the same way, you know, The Matrix is about being trans, in a lot of ways, like, Bound is about being trans. It's kind of almost the first cry for help of, like, we need to get the fuck out of this.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of ways in which, like, a lot of people, like, who are trans, I don't know if your experience is this, but for mine, it was like, maybe I'm just queer. Maybe I'm just gay, you know, like, okay, let's try that for, you know? It makes sense that, like, their first film was actually about being LGBTQ. And then they do this film that's, like, not explicitly being trans, but it's like so many trans metaphors in that movie. Right. So, kind of makes sense that their first one would actually be, a lesbian film versus, like, something that's more explicitly trans. I also like the idea too, I guess, of the bad guys in both of these films are, like, people, like, suit wearing you know, conform. Like, there's a big difference, I think, between like what Bound is trying to do, which is like it's these like mobsters, whereas in The Matrix, it's like the agents. But it is very interesting to think of like that their enemies are often like men in suits, you know, an enemy to me, certainly. Like, I have to go to work as like, I know I'm trans, but I have to go to work in a suit, you know. It's very clever, I think. Interesting.
Yeah, and it's only 3 years on that they go and make The Matrix. And you know, they wanted Jennifer Tilly for the role that ended up going to the woman who played Trinity. Is that her name? I haven't seen The Matrix movie since I was like 14. Oh, so
okay. Well, I only just started. I just watched them this year for the project. That was the fun. I had never seen them, and Ariel had seen them. So they're very good, and they're super trans. Like, when you rewatch them, you're like, oh my god, yeah, breaking out of eggs. You know, anyway, it's wild. Yeah.
Wow. Wait, is it okay to call people eggs again? I remember there was like discourse around how it's problematic to call someone an egg.
Oh, I have not heard that. But also, I bet people who are like, I'm sure people have like, maybe people listening have like made the connection, but I'm sure some people are like, what the heck is an egg? And then we're also like, it's problematic now. I don't know. Is it problematic?
I don't think it is, but I think.
Let's explain an egg. The thing about an egg is that like while you're like closeted or you don't know that you're trans, you live in an egg, and then you have these moments where you're like your egg hatches, where you like realize that like, oh shit, I'm trans, and you like the egg hatches and you're a little hatchling in the egg. But so what was the thinking that it's problematic?
Oh, so that you call someone an egg who has who you think is trans, but then by doing that, you're reinforcing the idea that anyone who deviates from gender norms is trans.
Okay, sure. I guess I never thought of it as like calling other people in their egg. I've always thought of it as like, I know when my egg hatched, you know?
Gotcha. But, I'm in some like shitposting groups, and you know, people call someone an egg, and then somebody else gets mad about it. You know, inner trans politicking is.
I've made that thing. I think on this podcast before, I've like, at least one podcast, I remember where I was saying like, there's a character who's like saying like, I'm not gay. And I was like, oh, I think the lady doth protest too much. I was like realizing like immediately like, oh shit, that's like kind of bad. Like, you know, because you could be like super feminine and a feminine male who is straight, right? Like, you know, it's like, I saw a great TikTok the where it was like, this person who's like pretty effeminately gay. And the caption was like, I ask a girl on a date and they're like, aren't you gay? And then he like slowly spins around and there's just a pan like tucked in his pants.
Wait, pants. There's a what? Sorry, I couldn't
hear you. A pan. So he's pansexual, you know? Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was so good. But yeah, I feel like sometimes we can like be like, well, that you know, I don't know. But like, it's kind of shitty to do as a society. You know, I feel like in the world to want things to be more accepting, to be like, it's okay if you're gay, so we're like, but I'm not gay. It's like, okay, yeah, that's right, they're right, they're not gay, so I don't know. Anyway,
yeah, and I mean, there's been talk about that with a recent contestant on a RuPaul's Drag Race who is a self-identified straight cis man, and you know, my first thought was, oh, he's an egg. Like, he's just some lesbian trans girl who doesn't know it yet. And then I'm like, wait, that's really fucked up of me to say, because it's like anyone is allowed to dress up in any clothing they want, you know? And it doesn't make them trans. But I still think Matty Morphis is an egg.
Stand by it. Yeah.
I saw some tweet that said that she had mentioned having gender dysphoria, so. But that could have been false news. You know, it's the internet.
Yeah. I mean, there's people who like, you know, the thing too about like, I think we've said this a lot as well, that like labels are super important when you're like figuring out your identity, and then they become less important at the more you know who you are, right? When you just know that you are you. And there's this thing where like, I think oftentimes we are like trying to put labels on people. We're like saying like, that person isn't like whereas like, yeah, there are a lot of people who like would actually not be cis if like, but like their version of like on the gender spectrum, they're like much closer to cis than they are like trans, you know, like they want to explore some of their gender, and their gender would not totally, you know, it's just this whole, I guess it's more gender than, but like, anyway, the world is very confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's like we say, labels are helpful. And I think as you get more comfortable with who you are, labels just don't matter as much.
Yeah. because we're going to ask the question, but I think very quickly before we do that, I would like to say that there's been some legislation that has been passed around in terms of trans people, specifically in Texas today. Governor Abbott signed. It's not a bill. I don't know exactly what it is, but basically, like law enforcement, whoever, they can like, you know, charge parents for supporting their children, their trans children. If you support them, that's considered child abuse, which can be acted upon by law enforcement people. It is terrible. And like, I think the thing that's like, for me, been very frustrating is that like, I think in the trans community, been saying for like many, many years that like, there's so much legislation happening. It's coming. It's going to happen. It's here. And then it's here. And people are like, how did this is awful. How did this happen? It's like, we just need to do more. There are so many other bills out there. There are so many other things that are floating around there. If you are in a state, look up whether there's legislation that is like trying to be passed and contact your elected officials. There's some charities, you know, I'll probably try and do a retweet today. Gosh, I don't have the one off the top of my head, but I will try and pull it up as we're chatting. Oh, the there's some Texas organizations, Equality Texas, TransTexas.org, TPride.org, all great organizations you can support financially if you're able to. If you're unable to, retweet them, tweet them out, do whatever you can. It's really awful. It's really terrible. It sucks, but it's not the only piece of legislation that is out there. It's not the only piece of legislation that's going to get passed or approved or whatever. So we should be doing more to try and stop it.
Yeah, for sure. It's very upsetting. And I also think that if you are not trans and you want to learn more about, you know, trans youth, there's a great show called I Am Jazz, or This Is Jazz.
I Am Jazz, yeah.
I Am Jazz airs on TLC about a trans woman who came out very young when she was like in elementary school. And recently, the Taryn Show, which is a podcast on RHAP, interviewed Nicole Maines, who is an actress, who she also came out at a very young age. And she ended up in a court case I think went all the way to the, did it go all the way to Supreme Court?
I believe so, yeah. It's a trans bathroom bill, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, she talks about how she, you know, about her understanding who she was at a really young age, and it's a very unique perspective, I think. I think it's becoming less and less unique, which is great, but I highly recommend that episode of The Taryn Show, Nicole Maines. Check it out.
Yeah, it was great.
Wherever you, it's on YouTube, it's on podcast apps, so.
Brooklyn Zed was also on Pod Friends recently. Brooklyn Zed, a friend of the pod, has been on the podcast, had a great interview with Matt Scott talking about lots of gender stuff. It was really great. It's just it sucks today. It's also like, unfortunately, not surprising that like stuff is happening. And so see what you can do. Look for what you can do, because there is more legislation coming. This is like their plan, is to like legislate trans people. They would like to out of existence, which is an impossible task, but they will hurt people along the way. So, yeah. I saw a good tweet today. I retweeted it. Trans children deserve to be trans adults. So take that for what you will. All right. Sorry, I interrupted with a very, very sad soapbox.
It's okay. But let's get back to the fun stuff. I think we're going to talk about how do we feel this movie held up? You know, once again, I think we may have answered it already, but I gotta ask the question, how
it holds up. It's great. It's so good. I wish I watched it earlier. I wish I watched it soon. I remember I keep saying this about, I walked out of Dune, the movie recently, when it came out last year, and I was like, holy shit, that was so good. That was so fun. And I was so mad that Dune existed for almost my entire, well, it has for my entire life. I could have been engaging in Dune content and I was not. And I kind of feel the same way about this. I'm kind of mad that I didn't know about Bound when I was like, you know, younger, but now I do. Now I can rewatch it whenever I like and know that it's very good. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, this movie could have been made today. It is such a refreshing take on like how it deals with sexuality. It's a really great noir film. If that's your cup of tea, you don't mind a little bit of violence with your
little bit
with your steamy lesbian sex scenes. You know, check this one out. I may not rewatch anything past the first half hour of the movie again.
fair.
But otherwise, I liked it. It was great film.
All right. Fun.
So we're gonna talk about what's coming up next week.
Yeah, a show I've never seen again. And this is maybe surprising considering I'm a big reality TV show fan. I've seen clips. We were rooting for you. we were rooting for you. We are going to watch an episode of America's Next Top Model, season 7, episode 6, I believe, although we will confirm that perhaps through Twitter and Instagram before next week's episode drops, but an episode where I believe one of a set of twins comes out. Yes?
That's correct. I can't wait for Grace to experience this. I was a diehard from cycle 5 to like cycle 10, which they call them cycles, not seasons, because they do two cycles a year, similar to how Survivor does it. Mm-hmm. And it is very of its time. It's very problematic. And Tyra, you know, should probably be canceled and live out her life rewatching all the mistakes she made. And
I'll be the judge of that.
And how she treated young women in the early 2000s and shamed their bodies.
Yeah. Well, this sounds fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be juicy. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
All right, but, sounds good.
Yeah, Grace, can you tell folks, you know, where they can catch you these days?
Oh yeah, it's a lot. I'm on Twitter at @HiFromGrace. Doing a lot of stuff over on Post Show Recaps, covering Euphoria. We are nearing the end. We just covered season 2, episode 7. The finale is next week. It was a wild, wild ride of an episode, although I feel like I say that every week. Also covering Raised by Wolves with Josh Wigler and Taryn Armstrong. Covering movies every week. We just dropped. We'll be dropping a podcast on Uncharted this week, as well as we did an Oscar pod with Ariel and LaTanya Starks. That was very fun. I do sports coverage over on Rob Has a Podcast each week, and we are on a little bit of a hiatus, but we will be back with a new format that I think is going to be very, very fun. Play some D&D on twitch.tv/dmphilly, and I am streaming a bit on twitch.tv/pie from grace. So lots
going on.
Yeah.
I got much less going on. Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram. It's private, but if you follow the podcast, I'll let you in. Non-binary, tagged in our Hold Up Podcast with 1P Instagram and Twitter. And otherwise, you know, I'm doing a lot of volunteer work these days. If you have been really distressed by some of the, you know, anti-Asian violence that's been continually going on, and you live in New York City, I'm part of a community safety group called Safe Walks. We're on Instagram as Safe Walks NYC. If you want to, you know, get involved in some way, there's all the information is on the Instagram. So check it out.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's it from us.
All right. We'll be back next week.
Yeah. I'll see you then. Bye.